Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news. Another ElixirConf video has been released. However, it's not on the ElixirConf YouTube channel or the playlist just yet. Theo, known for his TypeScript and JS content, well, he spoke a keynote at ElixirConf. And with the conference organizer's permission, Theo released the video of his talk on his own video channel. And so we've got a link to that. So just a little heads up, there's about a 2-minute intro where he's introducing what the talk is about and that he gave a talk to his normal audience. So when you first go there, it doesn't look like an ElixirConf talk, but you skip in a little bit and it is. It's his presentation. Yep. I've only started watching it. I haven't finished it. But David, you were there for it.
I'll repeat what I said on stage for a TypeScript developer that it wasn't so bad. Just kidding. But it makes a lot of sense that it's on his channel. He's probably has a larger a larger audience. I'm curious, like archival, you know, just for archival purposes, if it will end up on the ElixirConf channel. I imagine it will.
I assume it will.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is just noticing how some of the comments I was seeing on his post on his channel, you know, it's his normal audience. And people are saying, wow, Elixir looks like something I might want to at least learn just for fun for myself.
Nice. You
know, so it was definitely raising awareness and bringing it to a different audience. So that was cool.
Yeah, perfect. And speaking of audiences, the Elixir and Gleam developer surveys are out. So we've got a link to both of them. The Gleam one just launched. I think the Curiosum one has been out for just a couple of days. You can see the results of their survey from, you know, previous ones, at least the Elixir one, where they have around 400 respondents. I'm kind of curious if the number goes up this year. But also, the audiences here are obviously for these particular, you know, developers, right? Elixir or Gleam. So I was curious to see what our own little cohort, you know, is made up of and what our experiences are and all that kind of stuff. The Stack Overflow developer survey is a wide audience, right? Huge, huge audience, and sometimes not really fully representative of like the folks that are in the Elixir or the Gleam audience. Anyway, so, and if you haven't taken the survey, you should check out one of the links and go take the one that is most relevant to you.
And next up, little PSA that the Phoenix Live View has a cheat sheet in there that I didn't know about. Apparently, David did a little bit of, you know, digging and found it's been there for about 7 months. Well, I had missed this, so I wanted to make sure other people are aware of it. What it is there's a cheat sheet for all the PHX hyphen attributes that you can put in the DOM that have special Phoenix Live View meaning. So if you're wanting to say, like, you know, PHX click or update or, you know, any of those different things, this is a nice cheat sheet that pulls it all together. It's great because each attribute is linked to its documentation for more details. Because that was one of the challenges I had is I would have to go search in the docs to find a specific PHX attribute, and it could be on one of a couple different places, mm-hmm. right? So depending on what it was, I love the idea of just pulling it all into one place where I can say, hey, I'm in the mindset of working with the templates, and these are all the things I have, and it's going to take me to the right documentation if I want to go deeper on it.
Right. Yeah, there's one that's about forms. Yep. And then there's another one that's about just more JS interopt, things like that. Yeah, so it's kind of spread out. So the cheat sheet's pretty nice. I had learned the other day, too, that there's one particular one, PHX disable with.
Mm.
I'm used to this from the Rails days, right? You just, the Rails UJS library, JavaScript library, which Rails would, you know, put into its asset pipeline and all, does a lot of the same kind of things that Phoenix HTML JavaScript does. One of those things is, when you click the button, disable the button and disable the button and replace its text with this other text that you feed it. We have that for what it's worth in Phoenix land, but only in Phoenix Live View, which I was surprised by. Doesn't seem to work for dead views. So not that it's hard to accomplish, but I had to get my hands dirty, man. I had to go and write some document
code.
Query selectors Ooh. And oh. stuff, you know, and then yes. loop through the nodes and look, bind the event and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I know. Poor me.
I was doing that recently, just, you know, where you have the needing to do some JavaScript. I was doing a JS hook and I was trying to integrate another JavaScript library that was doing something special that I wanted to do. And it's so infrequent that I have to touch JavaScript that I'm always having to look up everything. Like, how do I find the node by a class name?
and then you remember things that are like 10 years old, right? Like you can't do a for each on node list for some dumb reason, you know? And I don't know if that's like if that's an old JavaScript thing or a new JavaScript thing. I don't even know if I can, like, if that's I don't have to worry about it anymore. Like, there's a polyfill for that kind of stuff. I don't know. It's just like, you just have to answer so many questions. What to do, what feels like a very common thing.
I will say AI is really good at helping find those little JavaScript things.
That's good. Yeah. I had to go through pages of Stack Overflows, avoiding jQuery because all of them were about jQuery.
I know.
It's like, gosh, get out of here. All right. Well, moving on. In a previous episode, we had mentioned that Dave Lucia, speaking of Dave Lucia, hat tip to him for pointing out the Phoenix cheat sheet, by the way. But Dave Lucia was also doing a live stream on YouTube where he was coding an Igniter installer for OpenTelemetry. So pretty nice, right? We got a link to that live stream. If you missed it, the recorded video is still available, of course. And Dave is doing a part two of his Igniter live stream, well, today, the day of recording. So the video, of course, will take you to the recorded version of that, right? Audience, you're smart. You know how YouTube works. If you're interested in that and seeing what an Igniter, you know, what does it even mean to get a library to like work with Igniter? Or maybe it's not even a library. Maybe it's just like a task you want to like kind of carry around with you to a bunch of applications that you help manage. Igniter is, you know, once again, in case you don't know, Igniter is the composable mix tasks that's source aware. Mixed tasks to allow you to like smartly travel the AST of your code and adjust some things, right? And so in this case, Dave is writing an Igniter task to like install OpenTelemetry for you in your application as much as you can anyway, because it does intersect with infrastructure at some point. So if that's of interest to you, you should go check out Dave Lucia's YouTube channel. He's becoming a YouTube star. Soon we're going to see his little YouTube, his glass trophy thing that, I don't know if you've ever seen those on other YouTubers. Like when they record, they always have the YouTube, like, oh, I forget the name for it, but it's just a little award thing that you hang up on your wall. It's like made of glass and it's got like the red YouTube logo on it. It looks all fancy. And all these YouTubers will like do another YouTube video of them unboxing the YouTube awards. When you step back for a moment, YouTube culture can be weird.
Yeah, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
All right. And next up, I created and manage the Elixir Langchain library or project. What it is it makes it easy for Elixir projects to integrate with one or more LLMs, allowing the LLM to execute functions in the Elixir application and return the results back to the LLM so it can come up with its final responses or recommendations or take next actions. Well, I haven't talked about the library for some time, and really, it was a recent post that showed up on Reddit that reminded me, you know, I should probably just mention this again in case people aren't aware that it's there as a resource. So a user on Reddit was sharing their success with using the library as compared to their experience using the Python Langchain, the official one, the OG, that version of the library. And they experienced a lot of issues with the Python Langchain library, such as unhelpful error messages, rapid changes in the library that outpaced the documentation, and the difficulties with seemingly simple tasks like streaming LLM responses. They also encountered debugging challenges and latency problems that were really hard to reproduce, even just for issue reporting. And in contrast, when they used the Elixir library, it was a significantly better experience for them. The errors were easier to trace. The poster, they really appreciated the ease of use of being able to use custom functions like that with the LLMs and making those calls easy. And despite their actual lot of experience with using Python frequently, but still having a bias towards Elixir, they were impressed by the efficiency of the Elixir version of the library. So they shared what their actual use case was creating a Telegram bot similar to ChatGPT, which required streaming the responses using custom functions and everything. They said this task was completed in a third of the time using the Elixir version than it took them with the Python version. And really my approach with the whole library is like, I'm not a Python dev, right? And so I actually tried to dig into the code, the Python code. I can read Python okay, but it's not something I'm proficient at writing. It was so hard to understand what was going on with the library. or the JavaScript version even, just because it's object oriented and there's stuff that's happening, all these different levels of the class hierarchy. And just like, what is going on? The way I've approached this is I say, you know, I'm going to take inspiration from the way they name things, the APIs, the concepts, and then I'm going to turn on verbose logging, run their demos and see what does this actually do with the LLM, and then say, oh, okay, that's what it's actually doing. Now let me make that happen in an Elixir way that's functional. And that's what I've been doing, right? And so it's just really gratifying to hear that it was working well for someone and they were sharing that. And especially someone who's a lot of experience using the Python version, right? Because I just, it's not been my, where my focus is, like trying to make, you know, feature parity or anything like that. Anyway, just want to put that on the reminder that that is there as a library, as a resource. And just as an update, I hope to soon be releasing the second RC for the version 0.3.0 release. And there's been a lot of great community contributions. There's just a couple changes I have left that I want to make that would be kind of breaking changes before I make the next release. And relatedly, you know, if you follow me on social media, you would have seen that I just recently posted that I'm open for work. And it's true. And so, you know, you've heard me here talking about my Passion Place project, and that's still going and it's going well, but it's just going to take a lot longer to ramp up and get to be something that can really, you know, be what I want it to be and to be able to be a full-time focus. And that's okay, right? It's a fully bootstrapped thing. I'm not taking venture capital, you know, it's like really ramp it up or anything like that. So I'm still doing that. But I would love to help Elixir companies leverage LLMs and AI for their businesses. If that's a situation that you're in and you're like, hey, we would really love to have someone who could really help us leverage LLMs. And, you know, hey, I've become very skilled at prompt engineering too. So please reach out online and I'd love to talk with you. Let's turn back into what's going on in the Elixir community. It's been a while since we've talked about any of the physical events. There's a lot of stuff that happened, but now there's some more stuff coming up.
Mm, yeah. And one of the first ones coming up is Codebeam Lite in New York City on November 15th. That is 10 days away as of time of recording. So maybe by the time you're hearing this, it's going to be that week. Ooh, wow. It's a 1-day single track conference and it looks good. The speakers and the schedules are available online. I'll be there. We'll have a link in the show notes. Sam Aaron, the creator of Sonic Pi, will be introducing Tau 5. I think I'm hoping I'm saying that right. We'll find out.
That's my guess. Yeah.
a new Beam powered live coding platform that promises to redefine creative computing. Coding platform, live coding platform. Is this live book?
have you seen Sonic Pi?
It is very live, isn't it?
Like it is very live. Yeah. So actually, yeah, we have a link to an episode where we talked with Sam in episode 106. Actually, it was back in 2022. And he was talking about how Elixir and the Beam were helping him solve real-time system problems and the reliability of everything. Imagine coding in Ruby, and as you type the code and make the changes and finish a line, and the clock timer for the music, which is live playing, and the clock timer comes around, then, oh, now the beat changes according to how you coded it. And then now you're bringing in new instruments, and now you're fading it out and doing all that stuff with live code, which is really cool. And, you know, as you start doing that, and he's like, I want to do distributed stuff. And Ruby was not doing it for him. He found Elixir and the Beam, and he's going to be talking more about what he's been doing with that. You know, it's been 2 years since we talked about where he was going with it. So, yeah, yeah, really interesting to see what he's done.
So sounds like it should be called Live Beats. That's just good. All right. Learn more about Tau 5 at Codebeam New York City on November 15th. Another good speaker there is Ben Marks, who is talking about building mission critical systems with Elixir. So he's just going to share how they developed Mosaic, the first Elixir system to command and control satellites. Need some stability for that. I'm curious how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, that's where you don't want to let it crash.
Yeah. Like just this past weekend, I was on my roof installing a Starlink satellite dish on my roof, and like that's, speaking of crashing, this is silly, but all my tools were sliding down the roof the entire time, crashing to the ground. So it's like, don't send me to NASA.
And there's another conference. It's AlchemyConf, and their website is up. The next version of that conference is going to be March 31st through April 3rd in Braga, Portugal. And really, when you check out the website, it is just going to be located in this super beautiful theater. And I'm just like, this is like high class is what it looks like, you know, like red velvet and gold and ivory and just beautiful. And I'm sitting here thinking, a bunch of guys and gals wearing jeans and t-shirts, talking tech. It's like, well, I feel like we should be like having an opera performance or something.
Get to sit there, profane the place with our casualness.
Yes. But it's kind of funny when you think about it. It's like, yeah, that's as tech people, that's what we do. We are just super casual like that. Like we don't wear the suits and everything for our presentations or anything. Yeah. But yeah, it's a beautiful place. Early tickets are 200 euros. We've got a link to the conference and they've also released some of their speakers. So you can go check that out.
All right. Well, I think that's it for Elixir news. Though I did come across one more little resource that I thought would be interesting to talk about. I don't know. Mark, can I ask you something?
Sure.
Yeah. See what I just did there? I just asked you to ask you a question. Does that annoy you? Like, my kid does that to me all the time. It's like, he comes up to me, he says, Dad, can I tell you something? I'm like, no, not anymore. You can't, not if you have to ask me to tell me something. Like, anyway, so it's such a social thing that there's somebody spent the time to write create a website around this, and it's called don'tasktoask.com.
Perfectly named, yes.
Yeah, and it's a short site, and this is not a book. This is barely, this could probably be like three Twitter posts for that, you know, the kind of length here, right? If you take this kind of experience and you kind of apply it to what you are probably experiencing in like your Slack or your Discord, wherever you're doing your usual, you know, talking with folks, especially when they're asking for help, somebody might say, this is coming from the website here. I'll translate a little bit to Elixir here. Yeah. Are there any Elixir experts around?
And like, that's the post.
That's it. Yeah. Like, well, yeah, but now I kind of know where you're going with this based on experience, but like, all right.
So I don't want to commit myself to this conversation.
Right. What they're actually asking is, are there any Elixir experts around who are willing to commit into looking into my problem, whatever that may turn out to be, even if it isn't actually related to Elixir, or maybe something, you know, who doesn't know anything about Elixir could actually answer my question. Like, that's essentially what that translates to. So here's the big like purpose of this. Like, why is this not such a good practice to do? If you haven't figured it out, yes, that's the implication. That is not a good practice to do. You're asking people to take responsibility for something by just throwing something out there and having them own the conversation at that point.
It's such a low effort ask. Yeah. You know, it's just like you're not even putting the effort into like framing something.
Right. And so from the other person's perspective, like they're sitting down, they're just like, they're trying to work, and then, you know, the little slack sound there, and says, and they see it float on their screen. It says, I have a question about Elixir, but I'm too lazy to actually formalize it in words unless there was someone in the channel who might be able to answer it. Just like, dismiss. So yes. you don't really get the kind of engagement you're looking for when you just kind of throw those big questions out there. All right. Well, anyway, if that was interesting to you as it was to me, there are other similar problems out there, like when trying to discover information, you know, from other folks. Like, classically, there's an XY problem. I run into that all the time. There's the no hello problem. Like, there's a lot of like little social cues that would be good to understand, you know, be aware of it. So that way, you know, when it's happening, try to get down to the actual issue, you know, underneath.
Yeah.
Because I believe that half of our job is as software engineers is communicating. Mm-hmm. And if half of it is communicating well, like, this is a good thing to know. You know, when you're asking questions on the internet, generally people will ask like, well, what have you tried? Nothing. Yeah. It's like, or I've tried this and this and that. Like, it takes a while longer to get to the bottom of what the issue could be. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thought that might be interesting. Don't ask just to ask. That seems silly. Just get straight to it. And there's other good social things that you could do to help speed up the process and respect each other's time.
The no hello one is, imagine calling someone on the phone going, hello, and then putting them on hold, which I think we see this a lot in Slack. It's a work environment, like that. Or someone might text you and just say, hey. And it's like, don't do that. So the alternative for the don't ask to ask is put in some effort to formulate what it is you're actually trying to ask about so that someone could glance at it and know, do I have the answer? I'm happy to give the answer if I have the answer. And other people like, oh, I don't know, and they'll just pass on. So just, mm-hmm. it's a better experience for everyone. It's more respectful of the people that you're mm-hmm. asking for help from. And oftentimes, honestly, when I put in the effort to really ask something, it forces me to think through it. And sometimes I'll find my answer before I even send it.
Yeah, you've rubber ducked yourself.
Yes, yep. I have. So yeah, just put in the effort. What have I tried and how has it gone? And clarifying what it is I'm actually looking for, and just be respectful of other people's time too.
Yep. All right, a little hat tip to Zach Daniel for posting that a couple months ago. Just came back around in my...
That's fun.
In my resources. Yep. Thought that was pretty cool. Now, if I could teach my kid how to do this, like, we'd be having more productive conversations.
That's awesome. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us next time on Thinking Elixir.